Chris McGinnis with their report.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network, serving Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk. And we got a lot to talk about today. Number one, Oregon lawmakers go back in session this Wednesday to raise taxes by a record amount if the Democrats have their way. And we're going to be talking about that today. We're also talking about the fact that Washington State is number one in America again, but not in a good way. Washington State now has the highest gasoline prices in America, even higher, and this is really the benchmark, even higher than the state of California. If you live in the Evergreen State, and I happen to live in the Evergreen State, you are paying more for a regular gallon of gasoline than even the poor folks in Gavin Newsom's California. And I'm going to suggest some reasons why this is not going to get better. And a lot of the reason is California. But let me get into that in just a moment. First, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. We've been around for more than a quarter of a century, and we always attempt to serve the interests of the Pacific Northwest. That's Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. If you want to join the conversation, and you're always welcome, it's 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, boy, do we get some naysayers these days. We're glad to have you. One of the few places where if you disagree with my point of view, we're going to put you first in line to explain why I'm wrong. And I'm glad to let you do it. You just have to call and have some guts and stick around to answer a few questions from me in aid of an objection, as the lawyers like to say. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our X poll today, and this has to do with what Oregon lawmakers, Democrat lawmakers, plan to do on Wednesday. What are they going to do? Well, they have already passed the largest tax increase in state history through the House of Representatives. It only passed by one vote, thanks to a sellout Republican who has now changed his party registration from Republican. Apparently, Cyrus Javidi didn't exactly tell the truth to the folks in Tillamook. Back when he said that he was a conservative, that he actually attached himself to all the conservative points of view, including keeping taxes low. Well, Cyrus Javidi has now become a member of the Democrat Party, party of slavery since 1829. So what are they going to do on Wednesday? Well, they got the big tax increase through the House. It now has to be passed by the Oregon Senate. They accept one of the members of the Senate, and they need every single vote the Democrats can put their hands on, got sick and needed some medical treatment, and so they delayed it for 2 weeks. Now, of course, all the members of the legislature, and that would be Republicans and Democrats, they kept on taking their per diem payments of almost $180 a day for being in session, because technically, even though the session took a two-week break, which ends this Wednesday, they weren't actually doing any work, but they still got their per diem pay as though they were doing work, which is a subject for another day. But I want you to consider this. Would you take a paycheck for work that you weren't actually doing, for costs you weren't actually incurring? I don't think I would. But should lawmakers block Donald Trump's tax cuts for the citizens in Oregon? And if you say, well, hold on, how come Donald Trump has anything to say about taxes in the state of Oregon? Now, only Oregon, because Washington State does not have an income tax. Oregon does have an income tax. Well, here's how it works. In the past, the Democrats in Salem were always happy to have the state's tax system linked to the federal tax system, because federal taxes only went up. So every time federal taxes went up, Oregon income taxes went up without them having to take a vote and, you know, do it in front of God and the public and everybody else. So what's happened now? Donald Trump got the Congress to extend the tax cuts that were first put in place in 2017. Well, since Oregon's tax system is linked legally to the federal tax system, if they do nothing else, then all those tax changes, including no taxes on overtime and tips, no taxes on Social Security, full deduction of business expenses, 100% in the year in which the business expense was incurred. I know, I'm starting to sound like an accountant or something. I'm not. But they don't want it to be hooked to the federal anymore, except if they unhook it, then effectively lawmakers will be taking away part of your Donald Trump tax cut that has already been passed by the Congress, passed by the Senate, and signed by the President of the United States. So should the lawmakers block those Donald Trump tax cuts from affecting the Oregon income tax? I would answer that one no. You answer it any way you like. You'll find it at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. On First Amendment Friday, I had asked you this. Should social media companies pull the graphic videos of Charlie Kirk's death? I answered no. 51% of you said yes, 49% said no. That is the most split decision I've had on an X poll in a long, long time. But let me get back to Washington State gas prices. There are a couple of reasons that Washington State now holds the record as having the highest gas prices in all of the United States. The average cost for a gallon of regular is $4.66. The national average is about $1.50 less than that. California is about 2 cents a gallon less expensive than the state of Washington. And why is that? Well, there are a couple of reasons, and California plays into it. Number one, state of Washington created that carbon tax. Jay Inslee called it the Climate Commitment Act. It artificially raises the price of gasoline. And what does the state get out of it? The state government has so far collected about $4 billion in what you would otherwise call taxes, except the state of Washington says, oh, no, that's from the carbon auction and the Climate Commitment Act. I don't know if it matters to you whether you call a tax. If it takes money out of your pocket and gives the money to the government, I call that a tax. The Seattle Metro has the most expensive gas prices in Washington State, an average of $4.81 a gallon for regular gasoline. Even Oregon is lower. And why does California play into what gas is going to cost in about the next year in the Pacific Northwest? It is because of this. Gavin Newsom, governor of California, has decided to try to drive the oil companies out of business. And as a result, he's increased the demands on those oil companies. And a couple of them have said, okay, we're going to shut down these refineries. They don't make money anymore. We are getting out of town. Well, what does that do? California makes some of its own gasoline. They also buy some gas out of Nevada, Reno, Nevada specifically. But if they run out of places to buy gas because two of their major refineries are apparently going down for good, that means they're going to start sucking gasoline out of Washington State, which still does have refineries. They can't really take it from Oregon because Oregon doesn't have any refineries. The state of Oregon gets almost all of its gasoline from the refineries in Washington State. So when you increase the demand in Oregon and Washington for any product by sucking more of it to California, you know what's going to happen to the price? The price is going to go up. In any case, welcome to Monday on the Radio Northwest Network. Always glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. The Northwest Nonsense is coming up next on the Radio Northwest Network.
Because you like what you hear, right? Lars Larson.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That Great Moment Every Day, where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
I certainly hope that I don't speak too soon in saying that this year the Pacific Northwest seems to have dodged its usual massive fire season. And if you say, but Lars, there are fires burning in the Northwest right now. There are, but an average fire season for both Oregon and Washington for each state is about 500,000 acres burned. In a big year, they will have 1,000,000 acres or more that burn, and I hope that we have dodged that bullet this year. So maybe this is the year that Oregon and Washington will go to active management of state forests. President Trump, as usual, is leading by making the U.S. Forest Service hike the production of timber from national forests. Let me remind you about the plus side of the goldmine of renewable resources in the region's forests. We currently leave billions of board feet of timber in the forest to burn instead of logging it. Every billion board feet logged means 8,000 to 11,000 jobs, mostly in the small rural towns that Seattle and Portland politicians like to ignore. If we started logging another 4 billion board feet a year, those forests would grow more than that every year, so you could log at that rate forever and literally never run out of trees. Logging and replanting denies the annual 1 million acres of forest fires the fuel they need to burn. I said 1 million because I'm counting both Oregon and Washington. So you can get jobs and taxes and salaries and one of the best renewable resources in the world, or you can choke on that smoke every summer. It's all about the choices that your so-called public servants make, and of course we can vote them out if they don't do the right thing. Your calls are welcome in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Our question of the day, brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery. Get better fast. Multnomah Medical Clinic. City officials in Sisters, Oregon, are being accused of trying to ban the construction of a bronze cowboy statue over fears it will draw conservatives to the town. That's according to the British Daily Mail. They're actually covering it on the other side of the ocean. The proposal to erect a bronze statue of rodeo star Lane Frost riding Red Rock the Bull in the middle of a roundabout has divided the eastern Oregon town of 4,000. Only 4,000 people live there. It's a great little town. I've been there many times. Mayor Jennifer Letts says it might pose safety concerns by blocking sight distance and drawing too much attention inside that roundabout. A city council member expressed concern over drivers hitting people because they were stopping to look at the statue. But one independent journalist, a man you hear on this show from time to time, Kevin Dahlgren, claims the council opposes the statue's Western theme that might draw conservatives to the town. He said, the mayor said, and I quote, it'll attract the wrong kind of activity that we don't want. Translation, it'll attract the wrong type of people. And why do I say this? Because of a Western themed statue, and Western implies tradition. Tradition implies traditional values, which really falls more in the conservative camp, and the mayor of Sisters just happens to be a liberal. My favorite post on X today, Lars, Sunset High School in Beaverton has a large trans pride flag hanging in a classroom window facing Cornell Road. What steps do I need to take to request that this is removed? Yeah, I got to tell you something. The way you do it, you call the principal, you call the superintendent, and they won't do anything for you. And then you call members of the school board and you put pressure on them. If they are responsive to the community, they'll listen. If they're not, and they probably aren't, then you need to run for the school board. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
Only the government could figure out a way to lose money by operating a shipping terminal in a major port city like the city of Portland. And yet, Terminal 6 is in exactly that spot. You see, they had a little labor dispute involving the longshoremen not too long ago. The longshoremen managed to picket and strike their way out of about $500,000 a week in salaries. That's $500,000 in payroll every single week. So what has Terminal 6 been doing? It's still kind of limping along. It loses about $10 million a year. So what's happened now? Governor Tina Kotek has said we'll throw in $40 million. That'll cover the losses over the last couple of years. There's no sign of it actually making money. And, of course, they haven't been able to find a terminal operator. No company has been willing to step into that mess and figure out how they can lose money on it. So the Port of Portland is going to lose money on its own with the governor, and the governor is going to give them some of your money. If it makes any sense for the taxpayers to subsidize $10 million a year for a money-losing operation just to keep Tina Kotek's friends in the labor unions happy, somebody call me and tell me why. Our best email of the day. You can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Cap Concrete Coatings. Turn your garage, patio, or driveway from ugly and rough to beautiful and tough. I've had it done for myself, and it looks absolutely beautiful. Check out CapConcreteCoatings.com or call 855-CAP-DAT. Randy writes in, Lars, Oregon has this money grab called Real ID. The cost to get a Real ID is $30. I checked some random other states. Their costs range from $30 in New York to free in Tennessee. I can see charging a few dollars for the extra time and a few keystrokes for the ID. $30 seems a bit high. The real scam in Oregon is that every driver's license renewal, another $30 is charged. I guess this is the charge for the ink for the star. In every state that I've looked at, no additional fee was charged at renewal other than New York, signed Randy. Randy, I think that's a reasonable objection. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and your calls are welcome. Let's start with Tamara. Tamara, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I have two questions, actually. It's about Dr. Javidi. Why is he still sitting in the Republican seat when he's not a Republican, that he should have to step down? And gas out here is already almost $5 a gallon. We haven't even voted yet. So with Newsom getting rid of the refineries and we have to depend on Washington, that's going to spike the gas even higher.
Yes, it is.
We have to go. I mean,
you have no choice.
Right.
Tamara, what you have is the state of Washington, where the public opposed the Climate Commitment Act and the carbon tax, and Jay Inslee and Bob Ferguson shoved it through anyway. It has increased the cost not just of gas and diesel and natural gas and propane. It's increased the cost of food, because food, for the most part, is made of energy. It has to be planted with diesel machines. It has to be fertilized with natural gas fertilizers. So that's baked into the pie. And then you have the state of California, which decided not to have refineries, although, Tamara, the state of Oregon is not exactly in a position to complain that much. This state has opposed anybody building a refinery anywhere in the state for decades. So when we say, well, that isn't fair that California and its loss of refineries or its opposition to refineries is going to cost us money, if Oregon had its own refineries, there'd be more supply, and at least there's an arguable chance of having lower prices. But as for the high prices, I think we're going to see high prices for a good long time because of the liberals elected to public office on the west coast of the United States of America. Thanks for the call from Tillamook. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Simply by listening, you're proving how smart you really are. Lars thanks you.
If you've got your kid in Clark County youth football in Vancouver, Washington, in the Clark County area, you might want to hear this. This league protects pedophiles. They protect sex offenders, and they allow them to coach your kids.
Now, that is an angry parent who put that post up. We reached out to Clark County Youth Football, have not heard a word back from them. But the name that they have associated, which I'm not going to use on the air, was a coach for Clark County Youth Football. And then the youth football folks discovered that he was, in fact, a registered sex offender. So I'd like to ask this question. When you put people in touch with kids, literally and figuratively, do you bother to check some kind of background check? The registered sex offender checks are not hard at all to do, because all you have to do is go online. And there are lists of all the registered sex offenders. And in fact, I'd like to know, did Clark County Youth Football screw up? Did they simply failed to do the background check, or did they do the background check and then they only took that coach off? And as I understand it, he is no longer coaching, but was coaching for about a month. I'd like to know whether or not they do background checks and whether or not they pay attention to what they find on those background checks. Let me get into some of the details of this in a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network. We serve the Pacific Northwest with honestly provocative talk radio. But this is a real concern, and I don't care whether it's youth football, whether it's swimming, or any other kind of contact in which some kind of event puts people in a position to go after kids. I mean, for decades on this show, we've talked about the fact that sex offenders, especially those that prey on children, try to get themselves into positions in which they can work with kids. Now, is that saying that everybody who tries to become a volunteer or a paid coach for some kind of youth activity has some kind of nefarious background? I'm not suggesting that at all. I think the vast majority of people who go out to coach baseball or football or basketball or any other thing, soccer, I think they're probably entirely law-abiding and worthy individuals. The problem is it also attracts a lot of people who have terrible criminal ideas about children. So you've got to do the background checks. Clark County Youth Football, I reached out to them. Email, was not able to phone. There is no phone number. And I would imagine that parents are not happy, like the parent who posted this. Take a listen.
Come to find out last night, we had a call from an assistant coach. The league's been going on for about a month now. I get a call from one of the assistant coaches telling us that he's no longer going to be our head coach because they found out that he's a sex offender with multiple sex offender issues.
Now, the question, and I know we've already heard from some callers who called the show and said, well, Lars, just because you're on the sex offender list, that could have been something really minor, like urinating by the side of the road or, you know, indecent exposure. I would beg to differ. The criteria that get you on the registered sex offender list is a whole lot more serious than that. I don't have those criteria in front of me right now, but in past discussions about it, you've got to be a level one or level two or level three sex offender before you end up being on the registrant list. In fact, for example, in the state of Oregon, a tiny fraction of all the convicted sex offenders actually are required to register as registered sex offenders, not even the majority of convicted sex offenders. And when it comes to a conviction, that doesn't just mean a suspicion. That means that at some point law enforcement has brought charges against you and you have either decided to plead guilty because you understood that a trial wasn't going to do you any good, that you were in fact guilty, or you were found guilty by a jury of your peers or by the judge. Now, I hear endless stories from people saying, I was falsely convicted of some kind of sexual offense. I always encourage those people to say, look, if you think you're falsely accused, then for goodness sake, put on a defense. When the person then tells me, well, I did enter a guilty plea because it was cheaper to do it that way, I say that was a conscious decision on your part to say, I'm going to admit that I did something completely heinous that I never actually did. If you make that kind of decision, you're really telling me that you probably did the deed. And at least in the eyes of the law, you did do the deed. But take a listen to what this parent says should be happening in places like Clark County Youth Football.
Every coach is supposed to be cleared before they ever step on the field with the kids. They need to have their background check done. They need to have all their concussion training done. They need to have their safe sport, all that type of stuff done, right? That's how we do sports here, right? That's how they're supposed to be done. We got to make sure we protect the kids.
Yeah, you got to make sure you protect the kids. And you would think all these youth sports organizations that are concerned about safety, about the right kind of helmet, about the right kind of training, about the kind of behavior you don't accept from the players because you say that puts kids in danger, and then you don't bother to do the background check to find out that somebody is in fact a convicted sex offender and on the sex offender registry. If you're not doing a very good job of that, how much can parents expect of you when it comes to the other things you need to do to protect their kids? I'm asking the question somewhat rhetorically. I would imagine I'm going to hear at some point from Clark County Youth Football, but we put out the request to them this morning and asked them. We still have not heard back from them. Let's go to Matt. Hey, Matt, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, I was a youth coach all the way up through 18-year-olds for 20 years in basketball. I have a strong recommendation here. I have never found a group of, in my case, it was for basketball, players that didn't have at least one dad who had coached, played, was involved. And I think that adds a level of personal security that when children sign up for a basketball team to do travel ball or just play in a local league, that the other parents know this mom or dad. They know them personally. They know that they have kids. They have an idea about their personal lives.
And the reputation.
That they are. What's that?
And reputation.
That's right. And so I've never had an issue. I always had parents who were excited. I had parents who came to me who had coaches who were not related to the children ask if I would be willing to coach their team also because they knew me and they knew my character. I'm actually puzzled. In fact, I'm not saying there aren't good people out there, but I am so suspect these days, Lars. I would be very suspect of a guy who doesn't have kids, especially if he's single, and he's asking to coach any team. And I would suggest the other thing. I coached girls' teams. I told the parents, I will coach this team, but it is mandatory that at least two parents are at every single practice.
That's smart.
So when I was in a gym with 10 of these girls, and these were younger girls, they were like fourth grade, fifth grade, I always had one, two, three moms. Interestingly enough, I usually end up with all the moms showing up just because they want to see their players and their children develop. So strongly recommend. I know I also refed in the association, OSAA, and they do full background checks, credit checks, the whole thing. That's kind of different because you're not alone with the children as a referee. But strongly suggest if you want to put together a team, get one of the moms or dads who knows the sport and is passionate about working with kids. Get them to do it, and you can avoid all of these things.
I think you can. I wonder if the problem they run into is when you say, we've got to have you there for every single game. I mean, you can't be a coach who says, well, I can show up most Friday nights or I can show up most Saturday afternoons. You got to have somebody who's there all the time. But in that case, how much of a cost is it when you're buying expensive helmets, expensive jerseys and everything else to add, say, $50 or $75 for a background check and just tell the parents this is what it goes for? If you've got 25 kids and it costs $3 each, $75 to run a background check on the coach, that's not some, I would think that most parents would say, happy to pay that. We want to make sure that people have a clean record, right?
Yes, and I will say this too, Lars, in regards to equipment. After the financial crisis, a lot of parents lost their jobs. I was coaching a team where some of the parents, both the husband and the wife, were unemployed.
Yeah.
I actually went, I think it was called Eastwood. I called them directly during the financial crisis when things were at their toughest. Because you saw kids don't want to deal with it.
No, they can't. Matt, I appreciate the input. Back in just a moment, we'll get to your phone calls and emails. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Think of him as your concealed carry. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. This segment comes from 540training.com. Concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense online at 540training.com. Jared writes in, Lars, you would think that after seeing the job layoff numbers that recently came out, that was last week, the Oregon legislature would vote down this tax hike. The layoffs are at 2008-09 levels. That's disgusting. Raise the payroll tax and more employees will be laid off and Oregon could go into a recession. I'm pretty sure we already are in one now. Right now is the worst time to raise taxes on Oregonians. Have a great show. I have a feeling the Democrats in Salem say, doesn't matter. What matters is what's good for the state government. I mean, a lot of people, and I've done the same thing, refer to the state of Oregon. And how's the state doing? You know what? I don't give a damn how the state is doing. The state is supposed to serve the people. Why don't we ask, how are the people doing? Well, the state's about to raise the cost of the services they don't provide at ODOT. How does that sound? It doesn't sound very good to me. And I agree with Jared. Why are they raising taxes? And you know what I think they plan to do? They're going to say, If jobs are lost, it'll be because of the Trump tariffs. It won't be because of the insane level of regulation that both Oregon and Washington have laid on. It won't be because of the largest tax hike in Washington state history, followed by what the Democrats plan on Wednesday, the largest tax hike in Oregon history. No, it'll be something else. Let's go to John, who's a naysayer. Hey, John, welcome to the program. You know we love naysayers. What do you and I disagree about that makes you one?
Well, it's not so much a disagreement. I think you're neglecting the fact that there's going to be people falling through the cracks for background checks because of take a foreign-born coach that comes from an area where a 12-year-old is considered an acceptable sexual partner. To me, that should be a red flag.
Should.
And,
yep.
And look at the...
But is there a way?
Olympic...
Is there a way to fill that hole? Is there a way to correct that? Because... You could just as easily say that an American-born person who wants to coach, who's never been convicted of a sexual crime, might actually be a sex offender, might be a pedophile. But until convicted, how do you background check them adequately?
Well, like it would be considered probably xenophobic if you and look at the coach.
I wouldn't. If you went against the foreign national? No, you could say we want to know the background of this person, and if we're not confident, we shouldn't put them in touch with kids.
Look at the Olympic gymnastics coach. What was his name? Nazir or something? Well, he was a Muslim, and they tend to look at younger people as being acceptable.
In some parts of Muslim culture, like Afghanistan. The minute the Taliban were knocked out by America entering that country, one of the things even the New York Times did the story that men viewed little boys as sexual outlets for them. And apparently the American presence made some of that happen because the religious police were knocked out of business. So you're right about that. But I asked you, what was the solution? How do you background check somebody who doesn't have a criminal record? Does it mean that they're not a criminal? No. Then you've got to go based on reputation, and maybe that's the check you need to do. Let's go to Jamie and Eugene listening on KPNW and the Radio Northwest Network. Hey, Jamie, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hey, Lars, I was wondering, did you see the statement PETA Kotex put out September 10th regarding the economy?
I read every one of her email or every one of her announcements, but what's the one you're thinking about?
Specifically, I'm going to read it so I don't screw it up.
Okay.
More Oregonian families are experiencing tougher financial situations, not by chance, but because of the economic uncertainty coming straight from the Trump administration.
Yep.
As she's in special session on hold to raise our taxes.
Yep.
How do you bring this to light?
Jamie, I mention it on the air, and I say, look, you know that both Bob Ferguson and Tina Kotek are not going to accept responsibility, saying, well, we've already raised taxes and fees. We've raised billions of dollars in taxes and fees. We've laid on a bunch of regulations that cost a lot of money. And now all of a sudden businesses are leaving the Pacific Northwest. There is a tie-in there. If you ask the Democrats, they will do anything they can to not take responsibility for what they did and to find somebody else to blame it for. And I've never... On a personal level, I've never appreciated it when somebody always, it's always somebody else's fault, whatever happened. Now, does that mean I always blame Tina Kotek for everything? No, I didn't blame Barack Obama or Joe Biden for everything. But where I thought there was a tie between what they had done and what happened, yeah, I'm happy to blame them. So if you say the city of Portland now has the second largest tax burden on individuals. So if you're an individual and live in the city of Portland, you pay the second highest marginal tax rate in all of America. So that means higher than San Francisco, higher than Los Angeles, higher than Chicago, or even Washington, D.C. The only place that charges people more is New York City. And then you say, gee, I wonder why people are leaving the Pacific Northwest when you look at Seattle and Washington and all the crazy limitations there. And you say they've raised regulations that cost money. You've raised taxes and people are leaving. Well, no kidding. I mean, these people are so, most of them have never done business at all. And Jamie, if they ran a small store and they kept jacking up their prices and limiting their hours and providing less service and charging more money, which is what both the state of Washington and state of Oregon are doing, they're supposed to be service providers, right? That's what government is supposed to do, serve the people. That's why anybody who works in government says, well, I've been a public servant, meaning you took money to provide service. Did you provide that service to the public, or did you worry more about whether or not you were getting your paycheck? If you weren't providing the service that your paycheck was worth, then as far as I'm concerned, you were stealing from the taxpayers. And they will blame it on Donald Trump every chance they get. Jamie, thanks for the call. It's the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Council.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails in a moment. I think we face some threats in society, and I understand that we're always going to have problems that put people at a risk of one kind of bad outcome or another. But what's disappointing to me is when we know what the threat is, we know how to answer it, and then the institutions that we put in charge of that problem simply ignore the obvious solution. And I'm talking about a solution that is legal, that is constitutional. So this really comes in two ways. I want to talk about George Soros and these crazy DAs that he's been getting elected all over America. And I also want to talk about whether or not your kids are being protected from other students who are, in fact, sex offenders, but they are still in the schools, and the schools do next to nothing to protect your kids. On that note, Josh Marquis joins me now, a former district attorney and served once as the vice president of the National DA's Association. Josh, welcome back.
Thank you, Lars.
Okay, let's start with Soros. Sure. I, for the life of me, cannot understand why this billionaire lefty wants chaos in America, but he's brought it about by spending tens of millions of dollars getting district attorneys elected throughout America who run on a campaign that they're not going to prosecute people and they're not going to put people in jail. And he's been, at least with this sick perversion of his, he's been successful in getting that done, hasn't he?
Well, yeah, mixed success and lately not very good. Let's be clear. I was an elected DA for 25 years in Oregon, and I was very active in the National DA's Association. I was on their board for 22 years. And it's true that America is unique in the world in that we blend justice and democracy, in that we elect prosecutors and judges. This happens nowhere else in the world, and I think it's a good example of what's called American exceptionalism, which is a very unpopular term on the American left. And generally speaking, for many, many years, I've been in prosecution for over 40 years. Prosecutors' offices, although they are overwhelmingly elected, about 95% of the roughly 2,500 top DAs in the country are elected. There's a couple states like Alaska and New Jersey that appoint them, but most states don't. They elect them. They just weren't that politically interesting for a couple of reasons. For one, it's not a good jumping off point to anything else. Frankly, if you do your job as district attorney, you are going to irritate people in the community by not making special deals. So most prosecutors, frankly, don't really have anywhere to go. At best, they might be able to become a judge. But for example, there are 535 members of Congress. I counted it up a couple years ago. There were, I think, three people who had ever been district attorneys in Congress. So this idea, and this is a mythology, that people who are prosecutors go on. So for that reason, there wasn't a lot of time and money spent on prosecutors' offices. And, you know, when I spent $20,000 the first time I ran in 1994, that seemed like a fortune. That's changed. And Oregon was ground zero for Soros' efforts in the year 2018 when he invested $1 million to prevent Kevin Barton from becoming district attorney of Washington County. Now, we all know that didn't work. He failed. But at the time, that was – at the time, it's been more months. That was the most money Soros had ever spent. He spent more since then. And as you say, at one point –
And didn't he spend a lot getting Chesa Boudin as the DA in San Francisco and getting Gascon as the DA in L.A.?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He had a whole – I mean – and a couple others on the West Coast. Now, George Gascon is gone, having been drummed by a middle of the road, actual former Republican named Nathan Hochman in Los Angeles. Chaza Boudin was recalled. The district attorney in Oakland, who was another source, was recalled, and Mike Schmidt was turned out on his ear. So that's the good news. The bad news is they still control about 30 or 35 DA's offices, including in some large cities.
Yep.
There was a very interesting study just issued by a group out of Virginia called the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund, a largely conservative group, pro-law enforcement, that basically opened up a group called the Wren Collective. Wren as in the bird, W-R-E-N. And the Wren Collective basically is a conduit for a bunch of nonprofits, including Soros's, to transfer money as they promise, silently and outside the public record, and to do things like set up media interviews, get these guys and gals elected. And they have been, to some extent, successful. And what's crazy about this, Lars, is our justice system works by having really spirited, good people on both sides who ferociously argue for their side. If you defect to the other team, it would be like in a battle having both sides turning on, against, the population of one country and blowing them up. I mean, it makes no sense when you have a prosecutor whose allegiance is to the criminals and to not prosecuting them. You have a justice system that is seriously out of whack.
Absolutely. Let me switch to the other subject, and that is there is a lawsuit that's been filed against the school district, and it's probably not the only one, where the parents are saying, look, our daughter went to school. She gets corralled in a bathroom. She's prevented from leaving, and she's sexually assaulted. And the school knew that this person, this other student, was in fact a sex offender, and they did nothing about it. Tell me why you think that's happening and what parents need to do.
I know why it's happening in Oregon.
Tell me.
In Oregon, about, 30 years ago, we started sex offender registration laws. And the idea was, because this is the sad truth, is that sex offenders rarely do it only once. It's usually a pathology, and the more serious it becomes, the more likely they are to reoffend. And murderers, frankly, are very unlikely to reoffend. You don't generally need to worry about murders. You need to worry about sex offenders a lot, frankly, particularly young men in their teens, because the odds are if they're already sexually offended, they will be. So Oregon set up, for example, a sex offender notification. Sounds great. There are roughly 25,000 felony serious sex offenders in Oregon. Do you know how many of them are on the public registry, Lars?
10%.
Well, we wish. 625.
Out of 25,000.
That's right. In fact, my number, I'm sure of the 625 number. I think the 25,000 may be much bigger by now. But it gets even worse because of the changes that were made in 2019 to the juvenile code. We used to, voters twice would get an 8-year sentence. They'd have to serve the first, well, they could serve all of it in the youth authority, but they'd have a real conviction. In 2019, the Democratic Party of Oregon decided they knew they could never get the voter registration undo it. So they basically went in and gutted Measure 11 as it related to juveniles. That was the first part of the problem. A juvenile record is much, much more difficult to access. So what's happening now is even a juvenile, let's say 14, yep, 15, 16 years old, who's gone, yep, through the system and been adjudicated of rape, that's not going to be available. And the school district may even be able to claim, oh, we had no idea. But
exactly. And when they claim they have no idea, then kids get hurt. And their parents are going to have to sue to get justice. Josh, thanks very much. Back in a moment. It's Monday, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Things you wish you could say. More with Lars.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. If you were one of those who thought that the tens of billions of dollars that was shoveled out to green energy projects in the closing days not just the closing weeks, the closing days of the Joe Biden administration, if you thought that was going to be the only cost that was going to be paid by Americans because of the crazy green energy schemes of the Biden administration, oh no, those costs continue to be paid. Let me give you a really good current example where kids were on board a school bus that caught fire. And now one place has had to shut down all 1,200 electric school buses because they're too dangerous. But the story gets worse after that. First, let me invite you to the Lars Larson Show. We call this the best conversation in talk journalism. And if you want to join that conversation, it's easy to do. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you can always vote in our X poll. You'll find the daily poll question at Lars Larson Show. You'll also find it on my website at LarsLarson.com. But the cost of the Green New Deal is now being borne by your kids in a bus where the wheels don't go round and round, as they say in the song. The story, at least today and this week's story, comes out of Canada, where in Quebec, the 1,200 vehicle fleet of Lion electric school buses, which is deployed throughout Quebec, was ordered off the road last week. Now, why would you take 1,200 school buses and order every single one of them off the road? Because they're electric school buses. And last week, one of those buses carrying five children and a driver burst into flames. Now, I'm sure I'm going to find somebody who's going to try to find moral equivalence of this and say, well, Lars, you know, those diesel buses, they catch fire all the time. Except that I couldn't think of a single example where, other than in an accident where the bus crashes, I couldn't think of a single example where a school bus, I'd heard of a school bus simply bursting into flames. But it happened in Quebec. Now, do you know anything about the Lion Electric school buses? I do, because I've been following them lately. What is true of Lion Electric? Lion Electric used to make electric school buses. Lion Electric doesn't make school buses anymore. In fact, it doesn't make any kind of buses anymore because Lion Electric went bankrupt. Huh. They must have been short on cash. Well, you could have fooled me, because just 3 years ago, the Biden administration gave Lion Electric $159 million to produce more than 400 electric school buses. And you think, oh, yeah, that's one of those government programs that says, we're going to give you a bunch of cash. You go out and make these buses, because otherwise nobody would make electric school buses right now. Now, there may come the day where the technology is so good that electric school buses are economically competitive with buses that run on diesel and gasoline and one of the most popular fuels, propane. I don't know that there are very many natural gas school buses, but there are certainly those that run on diesel and gasoline. And I know that a number of school buses in America run on propane as the fuel. But the Biden administration said, we see a future where America's kids will ride to school on clean, quiet, zero emission electric school buses. So what do? They put billions, not millions, billions of dollars into the Clean School Bus Program. Their goal was to replace diesel fleets throughout America with electric-powered vehicles. The problem was it wasn't exactly ready for prime time, because many of the school buses, school districts that went out and bought these buses, they found out they had buses that couldn't stay on the road because they kept breaking down. They had Lion Electric, which went bankrupt. And Lion Electric is a Canadian company. And this was the poster company for the Biden efforts. $159 million. Lion Electric was valued as a company at $5 billion just a few years ago. It is now bankrupt, and the entire company, this is how far down they fell. Remember when I said that a few years ago they were valued at $5 billion? They sold all the assets of the company after bankruptcy for $6 million in liquidation. They were unable to deliver $95 million, more than half of that $159 million that they got from the Joe Biden White House. They couldn't even deliver the buses to the American school districts. So what's happened now? The ones they did deliver to school districts, well, the ones in Quebec, apparently one of them caught fire spontaneously. So what are they saying in Quebec? The government-mandated interruption of Lion Electric school buses dragged on another day as inspections continued after one caught fire last week. The Montreal School Board put out a message telling parents that transport by electric school bus remains suspended until further notice. Now, they have these buses all over Canada. They have a lot of the buses in the United States. There are an awful lot of school districts that said, we're going to go out and we're going to buy these electric school buses. What do you think they did with the old diesel buses? Well, once the electric buses were in place, they probably simply took them out of service if they were old enough, or they sold them off. So now they have nothing to fall back on. And here's the rest of the statement. In light of the technical analysis conducted by Lion in collaboration with Transport Canada, the inspection bulletin said that their teams have been amended. Additional inspection measures will have been communicated as the verifications are carried out and vehicle compliance is confirmed. Buses will progressively, I don't think that's ironic, but progressively and safely return to the road. So they got a whole bunch of school buses that never performed well to begin with. They were not a good replacement. In America, an awful lot of the school districts quietly sidelined their electric buses and went back to diesel. And now they've got buses that may just catch fire with your kids on board them. And a lot of your money was spent to pay for it. Let's go to Kay. Hey, Kay, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a lot of friends that are Democrats.
Sorry to hear that.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
I know.
They're fun to talk to, though, Kay. They can be awfully entertaining.
But I don't agree with most of what they say, and I don't know how to ask them exactly what is it you believe in. What do you believe in?
Then ask them. No, you did it very well right there, Kay. Just say, what do you actually believe in? And they say, oh, truth and justice in the American way. And then start asking them about specific issues. I know they want to talk about Donald Trump, but ask them what they actually believe in. Say, do you believe that higher taxes are the way out of America's troubles? How about that?
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And ask them if killing unborn babies is something that's sensible.
I know. That's a good one.
Well, you could ask them, did 4 years of an open border on the south end of America, letting in more than 10 million people, was that good for America and its people or bad? And if you ask them that, and then, you know what's the toughest thing for me, Kay, is to shut my mouth. If you just said to one of your friends, go ahead.
Yes, that's exactly it. I just start to laugh and I think, what are you talking about, you know? But, yes, be quiet and let them say it. Don't get upset. Don't do nothing different. Just let them say whatever it is. And I'm not going to argue with them.
No, you don't have, if you just ask them questions, you say, can you tell me how 10 million illegal aliens flooding into America in 4 years was good for us? And then just wait and see what they say. They're going to say, but Donald Trump, and say, no, I want to know what good did the 10 million illegal aliens do for America? Ask them that question and then call me back and tell me what your Democrat friends had to say. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest.
The Lars Larson Show. Informed and always guessing what he'll say next. Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And if you listen to this show on a regular basis, you know that I'm a fan of nuclear power. I'd also be a fan of fusion, except that when I was in high school about half a century ago, they said fusion energy was right around the corner. And here it is half a century later, and every article I read on fusion is, we're right around the corner from building fusion energy. And you say, that's an awfully long corner, but that's what it is. People forget about the fact when you tell folks that we're almost there with the technology and 50 years goes by and you're still almost there, don't count on that one anytime soon. Although, you know, in various industries, all kinds of technological developments can just happen because of serendipity and a bunch of other reasons. But this week, President Trump is signing a deal to help Great Britain build a nuclear plant. Is that good for us? Or are we subsidizing foreign countries where our own grid kind of crumbles up? Well, Jim Beach is the best-selling author of a book called The Real Environmentalist. He is an entrepreneur and a host, a talk host as well. Jim, welcome to the program, or welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me. It's good to be here. Thanks a lot,
So, you're a fan of nuclear as well, or am I going too far?
I'm a big environmentalist, but I also believe that nuclear is one of the cleanest energies that we have. And so I'm a big fan. I'm, as you said, waiting for the next generation. You know, France seems to be ahead of the rest of the world in this. They have moved past water-cooled power plants, nuclear power plants, and are using other elements. And so they don't have the big China syndrome fear that we have here. The fourth generation French plants, I think, are the solution, and I think there should be one in every state for every big city.
Well, so do you like the small modular reactors that we've been talking about on this show for, I don't know, probably 20 years? 20 years ago, we first talked to the folks at NuScale. I'm sure you've heard of them. And they've come up with some, I think, brilliant designs, except that the only place they're not building them, seemingly, is the United States of America.
Yeah, I would agree with you. The small, I think they're called ARM plants, are very much a good step. You know, what we have now are probably second generation. I would put ARM as third generation, and then what French are doing probably is fourth generation, but it's a huge improvement. You know, we're still building second generation nuclear power plants here in the United States. We're only building one down in Georgia on the Savannah River on the Georgia-South Carolina border, and it's taken the Southern Company over 12 years to get it close to up and running, and they're, of course, several billion dollars over budget. It doesn't look good that they're going to get it up and running on the schedule that they promised. We need to go ahead and move forward to the fourth generation. We need to leapfrog, and I am a big fan of the other elements as the cooling agent.
Well, like thorium or some of these other, or salt, molten salt. I know some of those, and they usually, you know, we get emails and phone calls from people who say, well, what about these? And every time I look at the technology, they say, yeah, that one's, we're not quite ready with that one yet. But you're saying some of those are being built by some other foreign countries, right?
Yeah, I'm actually looking it up right now. The French are ahead of us. I don't think there's really any doubt of that.
And well, that's shameful.
They are,
when the French are ahead of us? Oh, boy.
A sentence that's never been said before. yes. Yeah, from what I heard some stories, that they can go 18 hours now without coolant on the core because of the new technologies. So I think that we have a great interest in moving toward nuclear. And if we, you know, if we were to go ahead and said we're going to put it as a forefront of our technological development plans, and we're going to spend $20 billion, which is not that much in today's world, to get a fifth generation, a super safe nuclear plant, you know, I would be all in favor of that. And I think we could probably do that in 5 years, and in 10 years have 100% nuclear. I'm, you know, a big fan of that. Even though, you know, there are a chance for catastrophe. We've had two catastrophes, and it didn't end like the movie said. At the end of the movie, the world disappears. And
yeah.
So,
well,
we're not getting
and Jim, isn't it still true that of all the industries in the world, I mean, say, take all the industries in the modern United States of America, every single industry has people who die in it. The only industry in this country that I'm aware of that has never had a death as a result is civilian nuclear power, meaning you're producing electricity for American cities. You've had incidents like Three Mile Island, but you've never had anybody actually die as a result of civilian production of nuclear energy in America.
All right. I'll believe you on that. That sounds logical to me. I think the most important thing is that this is a good deal for both the United States and the UK. And anything that gets us back in the Stephen having a conversation about nuclear is a step forward for me. So I think this is a good deal. Another example of Trump pulling the rabbit out of the hat.
Well, you know what I'd like to see him do? I'd like to see him go over to Capitol Hill and say, look, we get these things tied up in the courts for decades because the environmentalists, for whatever reason, even though it's clean power, don't want them built. So can we pass something that will deliberately fast-track things, not avoid the process altogether, but say you can't drag this thing out for 20 years because all that does is add cost and make it uneconomical? Do you think there's a way to legally fast-track these things and say you will have a chance to have your input about the environmental effects of this, but you will not be able to just simply drag it into the courts and hold it hostage forever?
Unfortunately, I think that's what they want. They don't want us to have extra energy production. And so it's going to be a big problem fighting that when we have new technologies, Lars, like AI. I think I read that the new AI plant in Texas requires as much water as the entire state was using prior to that plant being built. In other words, it doubled the water demand overnight in Texas for this AI factory. You know, we're all going to expect to have power to have those on and functioning. And if I were not to have my air conditioning for 3 or 4 hours a day because they're going to do some brownout thing, you know, I'm driving to Washington that day, you know, to protest. And I think a lot of us would if they took away our air conditioning. So I think there's going to be an overwhelming demand for more energy production because we're going to start to see it. We're going to have our own state have the Texas brownouts that they've been having the last summer. And when that happens, you know, I think that's a huge right-wing voting block that develops because the one thing you can't take away from me is my air conditioning. How would you act, Lars, if I took your air conditioning away?
I would not. I grew up without air conditioning, but I enjoy it today. But, Jim, I've got a whole separate cassette of concerns about AI. And how did it suddenly become that we are this technological country in which we say, but when it comes to AI, the AI brain gets the energy first before the people do? I don't like that.
Well, I don't like a lot about the AI. I saw an interview with Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI. Tucker was interviewing him. And he wins number one most likely to be a Bond villain, hands down. I mean, that guy is just creepy. And he personifies the Bond villain today. So I'm very, very concerned about AI and the consequences on our kids not learning how to think and on our environment for using all of that water. Listen to this. One, every time you hit enter while you're using ChatGPT, they just use a liter of water.
Unbelievable. That is Jim Beach. He is the author most recently of The Real Environmentalist. He is an entrepreneur, and it's a pleasure to have him on the program. And by the way, for anybody who wants to argue nuclear power, I'd be happy to do it. There is no reason for America not to be producing its energy that way. We're foolish not to pursue it. Glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network and always glad to take your calls. This segment of the show brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your house immediately. No showings, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. And our X poll today, should lawmakers, in this case in the state of Oregon, block Donald Trump's tax cuts for citizens in Oregon? How does that work? Well, the Congress decided to extend the 2017 tax cuts and make them permanent. They are called the Trump tax cuts by the people who don't like them. They meant thousands and thousands of dollars for the average family throughout America. In Oregon, the state income tax system is hitched to or hooked to the federal system. So when the federal system goes up, Oregon taxes go up, which Democrats love. And when the tax cuts happen, then the income goes down or the income taxes go down. Now they want to unhook them. And in fact, state lawmakers are considering whether or not to detach the Oregon income tax system from the feds. It would take about $800 million out of the pockets of working people in the state of Oregon. So should the lawmakers block the Donald Trump tax cuts for citizens in Oregon? I would say no to that. You can answer any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Let's go first to Jerry. Hey, Jerry, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, how you doing?
Very well.
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Hey, real quick, just to shout out Charlie Kirk, God rest his soul.
Yes,
what
sir.
Heck of a guy, sharp as a marble. I mean, sharp as a knife, you know what I mean. Anyway,
yeah.
The reason why I called was a while back I heard that Bill Gates got a permit to reopen the nuclear facility or buy a new one.
I think Microsoft, I'd have to go back and check, but a number of the tech companies have made efforts to reopen the one remaining reactor at Three Mile Island. There were two reactors. One of them obviously had the problem way back in the 70s, right, and the other one was still there but was shut down, and they wanted to reopen it because it has decades of potential use back in it. What should we make of that?
Well, it'd be great. I mean, it's clean energy. He doesn't have to build anything new, retrofit or whatever needs to be done to get that thing up and running again for AI energy. But it just,
I guess I'd ask you, if you restart that plant and you say, so this is all going to be dedicated to AI, so what about those of us who use electricity in our homes and our businesses? What about us? And you say, this is exclusively for Bill Gates and company. Or for some other tech.
35% to him, and then 25% to residential, commercial, et cetera, or residential. But we do need to build more nuclear facilities and hydroelectric. It's just ridiculous to tearing everything down. And then, we need more money from the taxpayer to, absorb costs or whatever from shutting everything down, which is just ludicrous. I mean, being in the Northwest, and they're tearing all the dams down and whatnot, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, they still want to tear up more dams on the Snake River. Jerry, thanks for the call. Let's go to Lori. Hey, Lori, what's on your mind?
I just have a question about the gentleman that was on the phone. I was stopping, so I missed the first part of the conversation.
Yeah.
But he was talking about the amount of water used when you hit enter, and also the state of Texas, the amount of water the current place they have down there for IH.
Where
did you find a way to verify what he said? Because
Look, I can tell you it's true, Lori. One of the reasons that a lot of these tech companies are setting up server farms in places like Boardman, Oregon, is because, number one, the region has generally cheaper power than the rest of the country. We may think of it as expensive, but it pales by comparison to, say, New York or California. That's number one. And number two, because they want access to inexpensive cooling water. Because anytime you build one of those giant server farms, they kick out a tremendous amount of heat, and you have to cool those machines, or the machines don't work, or they'll actually fry. So you've got to cool them down. Cheapest way to do that is run water through systems that will pull the heat away. So I don't think you're going to, I mean, if you wanted to, why don't you do your own Google search and just put in server farms and water, cooling water use, and you'll get more stuff than you ever wanted to read in your life.
I'm afraid I will.
Well, and okay, the thing is, just take it from me that I don't think this is a controversial issue. If you say, does it take cooling to be able to cool those server farms down? It does. And if you say, well, why don't they just use, say, air conditioning? You would have to use those server farms already consume gigantic amounts of electric power. If you had to use conventional air conditioning where you compress a gas and then run it through the system, and as it expands, it pulls heat away, and then it brings it back out and allows the heat to be released. That's how a standard home air conditioner or heat pump works. But you would have to consume just huge amounts of electricity beyond the huge amounts that are already used. So they consume a lot of power, they consume a lot of cooling water, and that's one of the problems.
Well, that's a lot of water, unless they recycle and reuse it.
I think they recycle some of it, but the problem is, Lori, let's say you want to cool your house down. You say, well, I can turn on a tap and I'll get 50-degree water. That's typically what the temperature is of water coming out of the ground, even in the summer, out of pipes in the ground. But you'll have to have a giant volume of that water. And as you run it through that system, your 50-degree water may turn into 70 or 80-degree water. And you say, well, let it cool down. Well, you could have cooling towers like the old nuclear plants, but you to shed all that heat, you just it's cheaper just to run more water through the system. Thanks for the call. You got the Lars Larson.
The Lars Larson Show.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network. We serve the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. Now, this next story is going to sound so absolutely crazy, you won't want to believe it. It's almost as though some really bad B-movie scriptwriter in Hollywood put this one together. But imagine this, $2.3 million allegedly stolen, and some of the people who benefited from this, these do-good programs that are done by the state of Oregon, were men who lived in a house paid for with taxpayer dollars, at least in part, and then at one point decided to rob a woman by kidnapping her outside her home, not in Oregon, but in Seattle, and drilling into her hands with a power drill to force her to provide them with her PIN number. And I think they got all of $40 for it. Again, like I said, it's like a bad horror movie writer or a bad script writer, but Jeff Eager is not a script writer. He's the former mayor of Bend, attorney, political consultant, and what he writes shows up at Oregon Roundup on Substack. Jeff, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Lars.
Hey, if I got any of that wrong, feel free to correct me, but how is it that $2.3 million in Medicaid gets stolen? It benefits or appears to have benefited the alleged kidnappers who tried to kill a woman and tried to drill or did drill into her hands with a power drill to get her PIN number and got a tiny amount of cash out of her ATM. And is anybody going to go to jail or be punished because of the theft of all this money?
That's a good question, Lars. So far, the Oregon Health Authority, which administers this program for the state, doesn't seem terribly interested in getting to the bottom of what happened with those $2.3 million. The company that got that money was a company called Uplifting Journey, founded right before they started getting money from OHA. And it looks like it's all gone now. But that is to say, the company, the house they were putting these guys up in is in different hands now. And their office in Portland is shuttered. And it, the company was founded by a guy who goes by the name Julius Maximo, which may be a real name, but may not be. And it's just a bizarre story, as you said.
Well, how is it that you hand $2.3 million to a guy and we don't even know if his name is real? I would think that if anybody reasonable was running the state of Oregon, of course, that's not what's happening right now. You've got Kotek and company in charge. But if anybody reasonable was running it, you wouldn't hand millions of dollars to a company where you don't know much about the background. And if monies were stolen, you would think that those behind the company would be prosecuted for that theft. What am I missing there?
I don't think you're missing anything. I think you're exactly right. And we don't know that for sure that the money was stolen yet. It all looks extremely suspicious to me. And but I can tell you that my research so far indicates that the state of Oregon does really almost no checking of organizations that receive Medicaid funds. That appears to have been the case this time, and quite frankly, the agency has tried to keep me from getting more information about it. So it's a very big problem, and I suspect when it comes to Medicaid fraud, this is probably the tip of the iceberg. And the only reason I knew about it, and now we know about it, is because these guys that lived in the house allegedly went up to Washington and drilled the lady's hands and tried to kill her and left her for dead alongside the freeway. Otherwise, I never would have heard about this.
I'm talking to Jeff Eager, who's an attorney and political consultant. You can read what he writes at Oregon Roundup on Substack. So let's back up a bit. Why was Medicaid money being spent to rent space in a house in one of the most toney neighborhoods in the Northwest, Lake Oswego, at all? And how many people were actually housed as a result of this do-gooder operation to take medical monies, you know, federal monies dispersed by the state, and spend them to provide housing for people in one of the most expensive neighborhoods in the Northwest? And how many people actually got housed for $2.3 million?
Well, all the reimbursements or the payments from the state were coded as kind of addiction recovery money. So this house was, at least in theory, like kind of like a halfway house for people with drug problems. And that's the program under which the company received all this money from the state. Unclear how many people were actually housed in the house. Neighbors told me last month that there were, you know, large groups of people in and out, guys driving their motorcycles up and down the street at high rates of speed, numerous ambulance visits, et cetera. But I don't know how many people were in the house. And the state of Oregon tells me that they don't even have any documentation about what they were being billed for.
What?
From this company, other than...
Then why don't we prosecute some state workers? You handed money to people, And you didn't even get a receipt for what's this money going for? I don't know. We handed it to this guy. He said he was doing something positive with
it. Yeah. Like I said, it was all coded addiction stuff. But OHA has records of having paid the $2.3 million to the company. But they tell me that they have no documents otherwise from the company saying this is what we're billing for, et cetera. And meanwhile, the people living in this house, two of them allegedly went up and did that awful stuff to that lady up in Seattle.
Yeah, we ended up talking about them, and they were apparently or allegedly members of Tren de Aragua, the notorious Venezuelan gang.
Yeah, and that's not me saying that. That's not a conservative saying that. That is King County prosecutors, Seattle area prosecutors, allege that these two individuals, one of whom is in custody, one of whom I believe is not in custody and his name hasn't been released, that they went up there and they drilled their hands and that they are alleged to be Tren de Aragua drug cartel members who were living in a house that was being funded, at least in part, with drug recovery public money.
By the way, I will tell you, Jeff, we've talked about that story quite a bit. And if people are wondering, well, how do they know what they did to this woman? Because they took her up to a remote highway, drilled a hole in her hand, then went up to dump her, shot and wounded her and left her for dead. And she managed, thank God, to crawl back onto the highway over the guardrails. And she got medical help and she survived. So we know what they did and what they said while they were with her and had apparently kidnapped her, took some gold, took some cash, and then, you know, drilled her hand to get the PIN number for her debit card. I mean, these sound like truly evil people.
Absolutely. I mean, that is truly evil. And so far, the state of Oregon, quite honestly, could care less. No one else has reported on this except for me. And, you know, you're talking about it. And Oregon may have had a role in funding that activity, that illegal activity. And Oregon Health Authority just told me, well, we don't discriminate against people based on their receipt of Medicaid funds.
How about discriminating on them based on their human trafficking, kidnapping, alleged, drilling into people's hands? I mean, Joe Biden was one of the best friends that human traffickers ever had. And apparently his Democrat colleague, Tina Kotek, is right behind him. That's Jeff Eager, attorney and writer at Oregon Roundup on Substack. Back in a moment, I'll get to your calls. And baby boomers are retiring faster than young people are getting jobs. Does that mean we have to bring in more immigrants to fill the gaps? I don't think so, but here we go. Hey, you know.
the best investment in talk radio, and it's free. Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Monday. Always glad to get to your phone calls and emails. Now, when I start to do numbers, I always confess I've got a high school education and year and a half of college. But the guy who does have an education in numbers is Steve Moore, the co-founder of the Committee to Unleash Prosperity, a former Donald Trump economic advisor and an economist by training. And I want to invite him back to the program to talk about a very serious issue. How are you doing, Steve?
Hi, Lars. Good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad to have you on. Here's the thing I want, and I think your piece today reflects what I've talked about in the last few weeks, and that is people are saying, well, the boomers, they're retiring, and they usually give a daily number that's kind of shocking. It works out to about 3.5 million people a year. Why is that a problem?
Well, we have so many people retiring now. I just turned 65, Lars, so I think I'm a little older than you are. And so I'm a boomer. I was the peak year. So we have a lot of people now. I think the number is 10,000, 11,000 people every day are retiring.
That's
now,
the number.
But we don't have that many people entering the workforce. So that means we're going to have either a shrinking economy or we're going to have to get people into the workforce. And one, there's two problems here. One is we're probably going to need more immigrants who come in and work, and that would be a good thing. But also we need to make sure that, younger people are in the workforce. There's been a decline in what's called the labor force participation rate. I think part of that is because welfare is paying people not to work, which is a stupid strategy. We want people, there's dignity in work. You can't get rich on welfare. So those are the problems that I was trying to address. How do we get more young people into the workforce? And I want to say one quick thing, if I can. The younger you start working in life, if you're 15 or 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, the sooner you start working, the more successful you will be in your life.
I agree with you, but help me with these numbers. I saw the 11,000 number, and I thought, I can do simple math. That's about 4 million people a year who are retiring.
That's right.
Now, that's assuming they don't do any other kind of job, Walmart greeter or whatever job I'm going to have when I get to be aging, like you. I am older than you, by the way, Steve, so I'm ahead of you. But I'm not retiring, and neither are you. But that's 4 million. No. And then I thought, hold on a second. How many kids graduated from high school last year? 3.8 million. And you say, okay, that's 3.8. How many people legally immigrated to America? 1.2 million legally. And assuming leakage now that we've sealed the border, that's 5 million people a year. So we have 4 million people retiring and 5 million people. And I would assume that most of those coming out of high school or those coming legally into America are not independently wealthy people, trust fund kids who are just going to sit back and do nothing. They all have to have jobs. So if we got 5 million coming in and 4 million going out, that sounds like they got the problem solved. Am I wrong?
Well, you're partly right. And the other thing that's happening is, the big issue now, of course, is automation. We have 2 million people in this country who drive trucks. 10 years from now, I guarantee you we're not going to have 2 million people driving trucks because the trucks will be automated. And, how many people, I have friends who are Uber drivers and Lyft drivers. And I hate to say it, but in 5 years, there won't be too many Lyft drivers because those cars that pull up will not have a driver. So the technology and the robot robotics will also change the way we work. So all I'm saying is I would like to see, I am concerned that we have more and more younger people and people of working age that are not working, and that's a problem. And so let's solve it by making sure let's start by not paying people not to work, Lars. You can get so much government benefits, you can get $75,000 in food stamps, free housing, free food, free this, free that. And you don't have to work a single day. It's crazy.
No, and I'm with you. But, Steve, this is why I saw when Trump came in and said, we're going to take the work requirements that were not brand new. They were put in by the Congress decades ago, and we're going to start enforcing them. If we do that, can we get enough? Because the last thing I think we need to do is start saying, well, let's import some more people, when it sounds like you're saying we're going to have too many people who are going to want jobs and not enough jobs to
No, I think it's I think we're going to need both. I think we need both. I think we need good, hardworking young immigrants coming into the country. And also we're going to need to encourage more of our kids and grandkids to be in the labor force. And if we do that, we can be the economic superpower for the next, the other thing is low. I want to encourage young people, get married, have kids. Birth rates are too low. we've talked for, years and years on your show and others about the idea of endangered species. If we keep having these low birth rates, the human being is going to be an endangered species.
Although, Steve, can I point out one of the silver linings that I've seen in all this?
Yes.
There was one, I think, 2 weeks ago, and they said, conservative people who describe themselves as conservative
are
having babies at greater than replacement level, and those who describe themselves as progressive liberal nutcases are having babies at less than replacement level. That doesn't, that sounds like a feature, not a bug.
That comes right out of our hotline that we do every day. You're right, that the average number of children by conservative couples is 3, and the average number of children liberal couples is 1.5.
And while not every kid grows up to be like mom and dad, a stunning number of people do end up, much to their chagrin, saying, I'm sounding just like dad, or I'm sounding just like mom.
Exactly.
So what do we need to do, and how do we, could we go to a system like Australia? Because my understanding is Australia, if you said, for whatever reason, I never want to leave the United States, but if you said, I want to emigrate to Australia and stay there and work there, they look at you and say, yeah, we got enough left-handed pipe fitters, but we could really use right. We could really use some this or that, whatever skill they want. And if you don't have the skill they want, they say, come down here, visit, spend money, and then leave, don't they?
Well, I like the idea of the golden visas. I don't know if you've been following this.
But I have.
You pay $5 million. We can reduce our debt, and you get a visa. You have to create a business that will employ at least 10 people. I think that's a great idea. It'll benefit everybody, Lars.
Okay, but can we do it at the lesser level as well? Saying we already have enough for this category, but we really could use some of these people. And if you're one of those people trained to do that kind of job, you've got a much better chance. And we give the priority to them to get the green card.
Yeah, we want people who match the job requirements we have in this country. We don't need sociology professors, right? We have plenty of those.
nor do we need the Joe Biden invited Trende Aragua. Could we make sure we get fewer Trende Aragua?
Well, I think that we are going to see a smarter immigration policy where we get the people who want to, the people want to come in and work and make them a better way. But the one thing I would say about immigration, we want to make sure that people are not coming in to go on welfare. We want people to come in for the reason my grandparents come, to make a better life for themselves and share in our freedoms and our liberties and our free enterprise system.
And you know what, Steve, before somebody starts to scream and yell and, lose their minds and say, Lars, that's crazy. I say, no, that's actually already in the law. It says if you want to immigrate legally, you have to show that you are unlikely to be a public charge, right?
That's exactly right. We got to get back to that, Lars.
Well, I'm all for it. Can we get the Democrats on board, or can we shame the Democrats by having the Republicans actually take the bill and say, let's invite people to come to America who want to work hard and be prosperous and be successful and leave the people who just want to come and be deadbeats? They can go to England. England already has a big welfare system. England can have every last one of them. That is Steve Moore. He is co-founder of the Committee to Unleash Prosperity, a former Donald Trump economic advisor, a whole lot smarter than I am when it comes to numbers, and a little bit younger. Back in a moment. I'll get to your phone calls and emails. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland. No need to adjust your volume. He's just that loud. Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. In the fever dreams of American liberals and so-called environmentalists, they can imagine all of us riding on trains and buses or maybe bicycles or walking. Fact is, transit is becoming less popular, not more popular, in the United States, despite the high cost of gasoline and licensing and insurance and everything else. I want to talk about transit here in a moment. I don't want to first see what Bill has to say. Hey, Bill, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. And if you want to join the conversation today, it's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Bill, what's on your mind? Hey,
hello?
Bill. Yes, Bill. What's on your mind?
Hey, I've been watching this. My name is Billy Crawford. I'm from Roseburg. And I've been watching this thing with this Charlie Kirk, which, most of us here are really upset about this. But, if you look at this footage and it shows this kid running across the roof of that building, it yes. shows him jumping off the building. He hangs on, he drops down 10 or 15 feet, and he jumps up. And then it shows him, where was that rifle at when he jumped off that roof? Because it wasn't in his backpack. He didn't have time to disassemble it or break it
Billy,
down and try to hide it.
Billy, yes. One of the reasons I took your call is I've been getting lots of emails about this, and you are missing something. Okay. If you go back and watch the video where he runs to the edge of the rooftop, we're talking about the man who is now in custody and charged with the murder of Charlie Kirk last week. He runs to the edge of the rooftop, and he puts down a bag. It looks a lot like some of the bags I have for rifles. So if you have an AR or a conventional rifle, you oftentimes put it in a padded case so you can travel with it. You can put it in your car, et cetera. He puts it, you can see him put it down on the edge of the roof. He then climbs partially off the roof and then pulls that bag with him. When he hits the ground, he jumps the last, 6 or 8 feet, and he lands on the grass, and then he picks that bag up, and as he's running away, unless you think he has a third leg, you can see that bag swinging in exactly the way that a bag with a rifle in it would swing if you had it slung over your shoulder. And why so many people have missed this, I don't know, because the video is right there. And I'm not necessarily faulting you, but there are a lot of people who get themselves all wound up about things like that. And this one isn't one where we wonder, well, what happened to this or what happened to that? It's on the video. You can see the guy with the bag at the edge of the roof. You can see him come down. The bag comes down with him. He jumps to the ground, then picks up the bag, slings it over his shoulder, goes running off. And as he's running away, I know how it feels because I've put a rifle or a shotgun in a bag, sling it over your shoulder. And as you're walking, the bag doesn't necessarily swing with you. So it kind of swings out to the forward and then swings the backward. And the thing is, if you said, well, we don't see the rifle, then tell me this. They've got his DNA from the rifle, right? They have the rifle itself, and I don't know that they've said publicly that they traced its purchase and ownership back to him or to his dad, but I'm willing to bet that they will. We also know that on social media a couple hours before he turned himself in, he confessed online to saying, yeah, it was me at the university. Yeah, because he'd been telling all his friends, oh, that's just a guy who looks a lot like me, what they call a doppelganger. But, Billy, have you actually looked at the video, or are you listening to other people who say they've looked at it?
No. I've watched it probably a half a dozen times, Lars, and I can't make the connection there. And
you may need to get better glasses then, Billy, because I can tell you this, having watched it half – no, but having watched it – because when people first brought this up, I thought I could swear I saw a rifle bag. I mean, just like the ones that a lot of people like me who own guns have, is you have a bag so that when you don't just throw your rifle in the, in the back seat of your pickup truck or on the floorboards, you put it inside a padded case to protect it. It's right there with him on the roof. It's then there with him on the ground. And the FBI says they found his DNA on the rifle that connects it directly to him. So,
Okay, granted, maybe I'm not seeing it clearly, but my other question is how did he get up on that roof?
The same way he got down, he climbed up. It looks like he was pretty good at, and whether he got up there through an inside stairway and then got down by climbing down the outside, he might well, because there's video of him from the surveillance system in the building going up a stairwell. So he may well have climbed up, but knew that he had the capability to climb down far enough that he jumped the last 6 or 8 feet, landed on soft grass, and then ran away. Didn't even look like he had a limp from jumping down.
Right.
All right. Well,
and there are plenty of Billy. I want to warn you about something on social media, on the internet. There are lots and lots of people who will craft all kinds of theories about this to say it wasn't really him. He's a patsy, like Oswald was supposed to have been a patsy.
I believe it was him.
Yeah, I believe it was him too, and I think they got him pretty dead to rights. But I appreciate the call. Let's go to John. Hey, John, what's on your mind? Are you on the same subject?
Yes, I am, Lars. Listening to what he just had to say, I have a friend that's very well versed in weapons. Anyways, that particular Mauser takes one screw to break it down.
And it may well have been broken down, John, but it looked like it was still a long gun to me. I have rifles that will break down as well. But you're right. You may be right. And maybe he took the time to break it down, although it looked like he was in a big, fat hurry on his way off that roof, didn't it?
Well, yeah, but they keep mentioning something about a screwdriver, in the reports. Yeah, but so one screw, to disassemble that gun and throw it into a bag, how long is that going to take?
2 seconds. If you're practiced at it, 2 seconds, and it wouldn't be a problem. So I appreciate the call. Let's go to Chris. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind today?
Hey, thank you, Lars. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
The age we live in. Hey, I searched the internet, and we know how reliable that is, for anybody demonstrating the said assembly and disassembly of that rifle. I couldn't find any. It looks like the barrel is fairly long, and I thought the kid carried in like a smaller JanSport backpack, not one sufficiently in length to carry that rifle.
Then, Chris, let me skip to that video the gentleman was just talking about. When you see him come to the edge of the roof, he drops on the edge of the roof a long bag that looks identical to the long bags that most of us would keep our long guns in. You know, like you'd put a shotgun or a rifle in. Not AR-15s tend to be a little fatter, so the bag is bigger. But I see him drop that at the edge of the roof.
Carry that bag in with him?
I don't know. I don't know if he I mean, I think we'll find out in the long term how he arranged all these things to happen. It could be that he sneaked it in at some point and concealed it somewhere. I don't know. But if he didn't,
the other nagging question, Lars, is why reassemble it? Why reassemble it in the woods? What's the point? And why not just take it home?
Well, I don't think, as I told the previous caller, when I look at that video of him jumping down and then picking up a long bag, not a short bag, a long bag, and the reason I say a long bag is as it swings by him as he's running, and that would happen to you. You take one of your gun bags, if you've got one, sling it over your shoulder with a rifle in it, then run. The bag does not run, and so it swings both forward and then back. And you can see that, even though the video is a bit grainy at that point, you can see the long bag. I don't think he ever disassembled it.
I see your point. Okay, why leave it in the woods?
Because, Chris, you can imagine that when he's leaving, he clearly wanted to get away. And he clearly was telling his friends afterwards on social media, oh, yeah, that's just a guy who looks like me, a doppelganger. And it wasn't. And then at the end, the FBI now says he confessed to his friends, yeah, it was me at the university that day. So why conceal it? Because if he had come running out of the woods, wherever he ran out of the woods, with either a gun or a case big enough to hold a gun, do you think that anybody who saw him on that day would not remember the young guy running with something that looked like a gun in a bag?
Sure.
I mean, it would have caught my eye. If somebody said, hey, there was just a shooting, and I say, well, I saw a guy walking down the street with a gun bag. Maybe it's him. Back in a moment. You got the Lars Larson Show.
When he talks, you have no choice but to listen. More with Lars.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. I do want to tell you one good guy with a gun story. A Pierce County homeowner allegedly killed an intruder yesterday morning. This is according to the Pierce County Sheriff's Office. A 36-year-old man with one gunshot wound lying on the back porch of a house about 1:45 yesterday morning. This was in unincorporated Pierce County. The alleged intruder died at the scene. He was seen on several home surveillance cameras in the area walking around people's houses. Sheriff's deputies did not arrest the 51-year-old homeowner as the incident appears to be self-defense. That sounds good. The incident is considered a homicide. And I know a lot of people misunderstand that term. Homicide just means man death. Homicide means man death. So they say the proper term for anyone's death caused by another person is a homicide, as much as people don't like that term. But if it was self-defense, then no prosecution at all. Thank God it didn't happen in King County, because God knows what the King County prosecutors would have done. Well, the city of Seattle has a really good city attorney who prosecutes the right things. Sometimes the King County prosecutors kind of miss the mark. In any case, glad to be with you. This segment of the show brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialists, Oregon Medical Centers. And our X poll today, should lawmakers in Oregon block Donald Trump's tax cuts for citizens in Oregon? They want to detach the Oregon income tax system, which is currently hooked to the federal income tax system. Every time federal income taxes go up, then Oregon taxes go up. Democrats find that very handy. Well, now that the Trump tax cuts have been extended by the Congress, they're looking at a drop in taxes for citizens. And you'd think that state lawmakers would say, well, a drop in taxes, that's good. It'll benefit a lot of people in the state of Oregon. No, what they want to do is disconnect the two systems. That will cause $800 million to come out of the pockets of Oregon residents and go right into Tina Kotek's treasury, where she can spend it on all kinds of foolish things. So should the lawmakers, when they meet on Wednesday, block Donald Trump's tax cuts for citizens in Oregon? I'd vote no on that. You can vote any way you like. It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Let's go to Rex. Hey, Rex, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, love your program.
Thank you,
sir. You know, I have a question. On the two photos that you see on, like, Facebook and stuff like that, where they show the one that's the from the security camera, and then they show his lineup picture, you know?
Or mugshot.
The mugshot. On the one on the left, you know, it looks like he's got a very thin, straight nose and a straight mouth. And on the one on the right, he's got a much broader nose on the mugshot, and his mouth is turned down. They don't look the same.
Can you tell whether they were taking a different angle? Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Can you tell whether they were taking it slightly different angles? Because I can tell you, I'm not much of a photographer, but when I take pictures of people, I usually try and take from above, you know, because it tends to be a more flattering picture than taking straight on or looking up. Can you tell whether the angle of the photograph is different, or do you believe it's two different people?
I honestly don't know. That's why I'm questioning it, because I do believe that they have the fingerprints and the DNA and stuff like that to confirm it. So that, you know.
Well, how would you, I want to ask you this somewhat rhetorical question, Rex. There was a point in my life when I thought about becoming an attorney way, way back when. Can you imagine being this guy's defense attorney? They've got the rifle. They've got the serial number and however that connects to him. They've got DNA from the gun. They've got his confession online and all the other things. Plus, they have video of him going into the building, video of him leaving the building. What in the world is his defense attorney going to do?
Be an honest liar.
I guess that's what defense attorneys do. They will try as hard as they can to get freedom, even when they know their client is guilty, which is why I consider them shysters. But you wonder, it's really kind of an impossible situation. And the other thing is, I don't think the state of Utah is going to change its tune. They're going to go for the death penalty, and I think they should. Do you know the state of Utah still has the firing squad?
Oh, yes, I do, most definitely. But he has to request that.
Yeah, that is true. The guilty party, if sentenced to death, has to request that. So, you know, you got to see what happens in that case. Rex, thanks for the call. Let's go to William. William is a naysayer, and I want to see if we can let's see if we can sneak him in before the we're getting close to the break, William. So what's on your mind? Quickly.
So I'm not a naysayer per se, but I do a lot of shooting, and the gun they show in the picture is a sporterized Mauser in a Hoag overmolded stock. The bag he's carrying is not a gun bag. So if I was this kid's lawyer, I would beat the crap out of this case
What is that long bag he's carrying down off the roof when he runs away, if it's not
most
a gun
of
bag?
What looks long is a string, sir. I've watched that video because I'm not conspiracy on this one, but there's holes. There's huge holes. And this is a pretty important thing. And to lose it over a gun that they could not possibly, 26-inch minimum barrel on that gun, 26-inch minimum. And most of what he's carrying is the string on the bag. It is not a long bag. You can tell how big the bag is by the height of the guy.
What's on the string?
What do you mean what's on the string?
You said there's a string. What is attached to the string?
His hand. The strap. The string for carrying the bag.
The Lars Larson Show.